So yeah, here we go. Welcome back to Outside In, a show about the natural world and how we use it. I'm Sam Evans Brown. Up and down the East Coast, states are working to cut their carbon emissions. The effort started first 10 years ago with emissions from power plants, and as of last week, they continued with discussions of a new program to limit gas and diesel emissions coming from cars. These plans are both iterations of cap and trade. But what is cap and trade? How does it work, or how will it work? To demystify these programs and answer these questions, we've assembled a panel of seasoned environmental reporters. First up, Annie Ropeek, NHPR's energy and environment reporter. Hey, Annie.
Hi, Sam.
Also on the line, Maxine Josselow, a reporter for E&E News, a publication in Washington, D.C., focused on energy and the environment. Thanks for being with us, Maxine.
Thanks for having me.
And Marianne Lavelle, a reporter for Inside Climate News. Hi, Marianne.
Hi, Sam.
So, for starters, Maxine, what is cap and trade? Like, how does this work from sort of like a nuts and bolts level?
Sure. Yeah, you gave me the hard question. So thanks for that. So cap and trade can get pretty wonky and complicated. But the best simple explanation I could give you, Sam, is that it's a system that works by capping emissions of greenhouse gases, which are contributing to climate change by warming the planet. And it caps the emissions at a certain level from a certain sector. So for the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, it's capped emissions from power plants. And for this new initiative that we'll be discussing for transportation, it'll cap emissions from cars and trucks and other mobile sources of emissions.
Well, and it's also like there's an extra layer of market here, right? Because it's not just we're going to pick a price and set it. We're actually going to let people trade carbon allowances, and that trade is what's going to set the price on carbon.
Yeah, basically, polluters are paying to pollute. And so there's a price on carbon allowances, and there's a cap on carbon allowances, and the cap gets lower and lower each year. So they're allowed to pollute less and less each year, and they can pollute more and purchase more allowances, but it gets more expensive to do so.
So if I'm a business and I can figure out a way to meet that cap cheaply, I have a bunch of allowances that I can sell to businesses that can't meet the cap. And that's where the trading comes in. Like, the idea behind cap and trade is that the government doesn't know best how to cut carbon emissions. The idea behind it is that the businesses can figure it out because they're dealing with these business decisions every day. And if that sounds like an idea that Republicans can get behind as well as Democrats, that's how it originally was intended to be. When cap and trade was first rolled out, it was in the Acid Rain program in the United States, and President George H.W. Bush signed that law. And it has worked successfully since then. And with REGI, the program we're talking about, it was Governor George Pataki.
So, Marianne, if we look at REGI, which is the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, that's the 10-year-old policy that has set a cap-and-trade program for power plants. What does that history tell us about whether or how this policy might work?
Well, if you look at the figures, REGI looks pretty good. The states have cut their carbon emissions about 47%, and that's a lot faster than the rest of the country. And meanwhile, their electricity prices have fallen while rising in the rest of the country, and the economies have grown. So it looks very successful for what it does. Some of the issues with REGI are that it only covers 20% of the greenhouse gas emissions in these states. A big problem in these states is the transportation emissions, and that's why the states are looking at whether they can apply the lessons of REGI to transportation.
Annie, can we say for sure the degree to which REGI has really been driving the decline of carbon emissions from power plants? I mean, the price for the credits has been pretty low, like less than $5 a ton, which a lot of folks don't think is really exerting a huge push.
Well, we can say that emissions have improved sort of during the life of the program, whether it's because of the program directly or just sort of it coincides, you know, is, you know, always going to be difficult to say. And we can also say that there appear to have been economic benefits. But again, like, you can never draw that connection directly. But I think, you know, Reggie is sort of held up as an example of, like, you can get states on board, bipartisan groups of states on board with doing the idea of this program, and it sends a good signal. And it also sends a signal to the power plants that this is the direction at least this region is heading. And so, you know, we've seen things like coal and oil decline in use in the Northeast, I think, anyway. But, you know, Reggie may have helped speed that along. It may just be happening on its own. And, you know, it may be setting the stage for this new potential transportation cap and trade program, which, you know, as was mentioned, is really our bigger source of emissions up here, about 40%, as opposed to the 20 that comes from the electricity sector.
And so what is that program? And where are things at with this idea of rolling out cap and trade, except for cars?
Yeah, so they're really in the early stages still. The states are, so it's a group of Northeast states all up and down from Virginia to Maine on the Eastern Seaboard that's been talking about this for years now and planning it. And most of those states, you know, have signaled that they would like to adopt this program if it's ever finished. Some states, including New Hampshire, have not committed to doing that. They just wanted to kind of be at the table for the planning process. And basically, this would cap emissions that are allowed from the distribution of fuels like gas and diesel. So it would apply to, like, the wholesalers, basically, of those fuels, not to gas stations, for example, directly. The distributors would buy allowances to sell more fuel than the emissions limit, or more sort of the emissions worth of fuel that they're selling. And then that limit would decline over time, and the cost potentially would be passed on to consumers. But in theory, the proceeds from the project would go toward investing in, like, electric vehicle charging stations, commuter rail, bike and pedestrian projects, and other ways to reduce emissions from the transportation sector in the long term.
How is transportation different from power plants, and how easily is it going to be to apply this same idea to a totally different sector in which you've got, you know, millions of sources of gas?
Yeah, it's going to be a lot harder. I mean, this side of the emission spectrum is way more public facing. It's way more driven by individual consumer choices, like, directly, as opposed to, you know, we buy our electricity from power plants, but you don't pick what fuels you're buying from for the most part. You just get the electricity that comes out of the mix, and the industry kind of controls what that mix is and what they're buying and what emissions they're creating. With cars and trucks, you're making those decisions, or at least you are presented with the choices about what kinds of transportation you can use and what cars you buy and whether it's worth it to you to try to have an electric car when there isn't that much infrastructure for it yet, or if you want to live somewhere where you have public transportation, or if you can't afford to do that. And that's all sort of in the consumer's hands. And so the pass-through of this is a lot different, too. I think, you know, consumers are going to be, like, when we did a story about this program in the past couple of weeks, and immediately the reaction was, that's an increase to the gas tax. We don't want that. We don't want to have to pay for this at the gas pump. And mm-hmm. So I think that's going to be sort of the tough sell. And depending on what kind of companies this applies to and how much it's, like, marketed as being passed on to consumers, you know, it's going to make it a lot harder to get more hesitant states or conservative states, I think, on board with going whole hog on it.
Maxine, Marianne, thoughts as to how this might be?
Yeah, and we don't have the robust alternatives in transportation that there are in electricity. I mean, a lot of these utilities have switched to natural gas and renewables. So that's helped them meet the Reggie goals, but we don't have the infrastructure for electric cars. We don't have enough electric cars that are affordable on the market, and so it's harder. But I will say one thing. The proceeds we haven't talked about in these cap and trade programs, they've been really huge for the Reggie states. And even if you can't say that the price has been high enough to really drive down carbon emissions, it's been high enough to generate like $3.2 billion for
right.
the states.
Not chump change.
Yeah, and so the states have put that into different things. In New Hampshire, a lot of it has gone to helping people with their utility bills. Other states have focused on energy efficiency upgrades, and the proceeds in a transportation system. That would be a pot of money that would help us invest in things like the infrastructure, like the mass transit options that we really need in order to drive down transportation emissions.
I would just say that when it comes to transportation as opposed to the power sector, it just gets a lot more complex and complicated. And I would point you to a recent story that I wrote. The headline was "Cap and Trade for Cars." Quote, it gets pretty complicated.
Because cap and trade wasn't complicated enough.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. If cap and trade was not complicated enough, then you put transportation in the mix and it gets a whole lot wonkier and hard to explain to my mom, for example, who's probably listening to this right now. But I think power plants are stationary sources of pollution. So they sit in place, whereas cars are mobile sources of pollution and they cross state lines. So that in and of itself makes it trickier to cap emissions from those sources. And then when you're talking about who would be the regulated entity, power plants are very obvious with RGGI, but there isn't really an obvious regulated entity with transportation. It wouldn't be the gas station owners. It wouldn't be individual people who pay for gas at the pump. And I think the leaders of the program are thinking it would be something called prime suppliers, which they're defining as companies that transport petroleum products across state lines, which, again, sounds pretty complicated.
Yeah. Well, and even that, it's sort of a funny place to land because the wholesalers didn't create the oil demand and nor did they pull it out of the ground, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And then on the proceeds question, I think something that I've reported on that's really important to mention here is the whole question of equity and environmental justice. So RGGI has faced some criticism for not really prioritizing equity a whole lot. And I think the leaders of this new initiative for transportation, which is being called the Transportation and Climate Initiative, are really looking to prioritize equity from the get-go. And that means when they use the proceeds from the sale of carbon allowances, they really want to make sure that they go towards meaningful emission reductions in communities that have historically borne the brunt of air pollution from vehicles. So that means low-income and minority communities. And I think there's a consensus that using a lot of the proceeds for things like electric vehicle tax incentives would not be an equitable use necessarily, because there's a lot of research showing that most people who buy electric vehicles are in a pretty high income bracket, and more equitable way of using the proceeds would be building out public transit in underserved communities and contributing to meaningful emissions reductions in those communities.
Is any other last thoughts?
I would just say that I think one thing that's really interesting about these programs is the flexibility of them. And I know that they're trying to do that with the Transportation and Climate Initiative is build in, you know, you can sort of customize it for your state and for your state's needs. And so, you know, potentially you could see that states that have greater environmental justice needs, for example, or that already have some public transportation or less public transportation could focus on that. I mean, they're going to get the proceeds and be able to do potentially whatever they want with them, which is what's happened with RGGI. And in some states like New Hampshire, we've rebated it mostly to customers, which is the legislature's choice. And in other states, it's been more focused on programs. And so we could see, I mean, New Hampshire commuter rail is a perennial political football, right? And so it would be really interesting if there was suddenly a huge pot of money to invest in that, or to invest in electric vehicle chargers, you know, to watch the political discourse kind of get that shot in the arm and see what we could do with that money. I mean, RGGI has meant that we talk about carbon emissions and energy efficiency investment and all that at the State House every single year. And so I think that's one really interesting outcome from these programs, is just it puts it on the table and gives states a chance to sort of reckon with it in a more realistic way.
Thank you all so much. Marianne Lavelle is a reporter for Inside Climate News. Maxine Joselow reports for E&E News. And Annie Ropeek is NHPR's energy and environment reporter. I'm Sam Evans Brown. Thanks for being with us.
All right, oh, great. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Outside In was produced this week by Erica Janik, me, Sam Evans Brown, Justine Paradise, Jimmy Gutierrez, and Taylor Quimby. music in this week's episode from Blue Dot Sessions. Our theme music is by Breakmaster Cylinder. Outside In is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio.